It's time for Let's Talk Legal with your hosts, Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins from the law firm of Harvell & Collins. If you've got a legal question, they can give you the answer. Call now, 1-800-818-2255, and Let's Talk Legal.
And Let's Talk Legal brought to you by Harvell & Collins Attorneys at Law with Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins, both in the studio this morning. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning, Ben.
Good morning, Ben.
What are we talking about today?
Ben, we're going to spend today and next week probably talking about elder law. What is it, and what are the aspects of the law that are involved in advising folks in that category of the law? Mm-hmm. It's a fairly general area of the law. Elder law, for instance, includes such things. Some of the key buzzwords are guardianship,
right,
incompetency, mm-hmm, powers of attorney, both health care as well as financial.
Right.
Protecting assets from the devastating consequences of a long-term stay in a nursing home. Family dynamics between the elder person and other members of the family. Contracts to provide care for your loved one and what the impact of those contracts might be. All of those things are under the category of elder law.
Not to mention wills and trusts.
Mention, of course, wills and trusts and estate planning, which is one of the most threshold things that we begin the process.
Hey, you know, one of the things that you taught us when we first began this show about demystifying the law,
right,
is that not every attorney specializes in this, but this is one of y'all's specialties.
Well, it is something that we have put a lot of research, time, effort, energy into knowing as many aspects of this law as possible. Absolutely, Ben. The North Carolina Bar Association has an elder law section, if you will. There are certain continuing educations that there's an elder law symposium this year that I, in fact, went to as part of my continuing education. So Wes and I absolutely spend a lot of our education time in staying abreast of the laws in this area of the law so that we are available to do the very best that we can to advise our clients.
Okay. All right. So where do we want to go with this?
Well, probably the top of the list for people when they have questions about elder law is, you know, what happens if mom or dad end up in a nursing home?
You
know, that's $5,000-$6,000 a month. We remember back years ago that we thought about getting long-term care insurance, but we decided not to, and now we can't afford it. And again, you know, Cecil and I, we advise people about long-term care insurance, you know, when they come in and they talk about these kind of issues. And a lot of times we're recommending that they go ahead and look into that and see if they can afford that.
Right.
So that would be one of the ways that we can cover that cost of care. Another way that we can cover the cost of care is the way that we're trying to avoid in most cases, which is the private pay. Somehow come up with $5,000 or $6,000 a month until basically there's not much of anything left. And then the third way would be under the Medicaid program.
Right.
I think it's important, as we've talked about on the program before, when we're talking about this long-term care, skilled nursing care, type of care that our loved one, you know, may receive, to differentiate between Medicare and Medicaid.
Yeah, always a big question.
It is. Even to differentiate between, any health insurance that you may have and Medicaid. Now the difference for purposes of understanding what's going to be covered under long-term care expenses of the $5,000-$6,000 a month average in North Carolina is just that Medicare will only cover up to 100 days of that type of coverage, that type of care. And they typically will only cover the first 20 days, which is sometimes referred to as the rehab period. And the idea there is that Medicare is more of a medical coverage, not a long-term care coverage.
Exactly.
So if you end up having to go into, let's say, a rehab type situation where you've been in the hospital, maybe there was a stroke, you discharged into the hospital or from the hospital to a care facility where rehab is provided, then Medicare will usually cover that first 20 days But then when we get to that day 21, a medical determination will be made as to whether you're continuing to improve or whether you've, I guess the right term would be plateaued. Mm-hmm. And in the event you've kind of met your goal and you're not getting any better, but you still have to be in the care facility, then that Medicare is going to cut off that coverage.
And having been part of those discussions, it's not only are you making some progress, but do you want to make progress too? That's a consideration.
That's absolutely true. I think that, you know, I'm not a medical doctor or a physical mm-hmm. therapist or occupational therapist, but I think that, you know, Cecil and I see this a good bit that, you know, a lot of times the success of that rehab is part and parcel and connected at the hip, if you will, mm-hmm. with the psychological aspect of wanting to get better. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I would agree with that.
Yeah.
That's not legal advice.
Right, but it's part of that continuum, and it does. Yeah. And so often you do get to that 20-day mark, and people are making that progress, and it can extend. But, again, right. That's not long-term care still, even if it goes out to the whole 100 days.
That's right. It's really just the caring for the actual medical care. And, the Medicare is like medical insurance. I mean, mm-hmm. that's the way it's supposed to be treated. Medicaid, on the other hand, has a component. There are multiple components of Medicaid. Medicaid, of course, deals with, folks who are having babies who don't have assets. I mean, they deal with, the young, they deal with the old, but there is
there's an income test.
Well, there's a component of it dealing with long-term health care and long-term mm-hmm. care. But it's means tested. Mm-hmm. We look at the assets that the individual has to make a determination as to whether he or she would be eligible for any Medicaid coverage. The very good thing about Medicaid is that in the event that you're eligible, that Medicaid is going to cover all of that $5,000 to $6,000 per month over and above any income that you have. So, mm-hmm. for example, if you have $1,000 Social Security income that comes in per month in your name individually and you're the applicant and recipient of the Medicaid and the long-term care is $6,000 a month, then Medicaid is going to cover five of it.
Mm-hmm.
So, obviously it covers a huge chunk, almost all of it, except for the income. But it is very much tested as a result of, looking at, assets that you have to determine if you're eligible. And that's really where the rubber hits the road with regard to the attorneys giving advice mm-hmm. to the client, because the rules that apply with regard to becoming eligible for Medicaid are vast and they're complicated and they change.
Right.
So you really almost have to be an expert in the ins and outs of these rules in order to properly advise clients and help people structure assets in a way that are legal. But we'll protect those assets from being counted by Medicaid and also being subject to estate recovery liens. And Cecil and I can talk about these details now about that.
Now, we're not even getting into the wrinkles that the Affordable Care Act or Obamacare may add into this as well,
right,
with expanding Medicaid or not expanding in some states,
right,
et cetera. So there's more wrinkles to it.
There are wrinkles, but, really in short, the changes that we're dealing with that we see on the news, mm-hmm. Obamacare, so on and so forth, really do not affect, have not affected the Medicaid eligibility in North Carolina as it relates to long-term care.
Right.
We're still dealing with those same rules with regard to becoming eligible.
All right. Well, we'll get into this in a little bit more detail in just a moment here on Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins, Attorneys at Law, here on the Talk Station, FM 107 and AM 1240. You're invited to call and ask your questions because we often have a lot of them around this subject. Give us a call at 800-818-2255, 247-7282, 353-4674. Welcome back here on Coastal Daybreak, and Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins, Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins from the law firm of Harvell and Collins. And we have Finley on the line with us this morning. Good morning, Finley. How are you?
Hey, Ben. Good morning. How y'all doing?
Doing all right. What's the question for us today?
Listen, I'm just driving along listening to your conversation. The question is about means testing for Medicaid. Do I assume correctly that if someone in that position owns a home, that part of that means testing is they would have to sell that home to help pay the bills before Medicaid would? Is that correct?
That's a big question. Always comes up.
That's an excellent question. With a not extremely simple answer, Finley, it begins with the concept that the family is told basically that the person needing Medicaid is able to hold on to their home as long as there is an intent to return home. And of course, everyone elects basically to state and affirm that there is this intention to return home.
Mm-hmm.
And if there is this intention to return home under the Medicaid laws, then of course, one is able to continue to hold on to the home, title to the home, and qualify for Medicaid.
But that's not the final chapter.
That's not the final chapter. So the first step is that on the first side of the coin is that it will not, owning the home or owning real property will not disqualify you from Medicaid if you have an intention to return to the home. The second aspect of this, though, is that if you do hold on to the home, which most folks do, and you then qualify for Medicaid and you receive benefits, then the state of North Carolina Department of Medical Assistance is going to lien that home under a state recovery when our loved one is no longer living and when that home is a part of their estate. Our state at that point has an option to come in and place a lien on the home, and they're very aggressive about this, by the way. They're without fail, almost without exception. This lien comes into the estate division of the clerk of court in the county in which the person was living to look at the assets that are in the estate. And of course, obviously, because of the fact that the family held on to the home, that asset then will be in the estate. And it is at that point then that the family is faced with this dilemma.
Okay.
Well, if you look down the road, say a couple of years, and you have a parent or a relative or somebody, and you know they're probably gonna have to do it, is it legal to sell that home, say 2 or 3 years in advance to another relative, maybe a friend, somebody not part of the family, with the understanding that the person is going to stay in the house, perhaps rent-free?
There's a lot of options.
Here. Well, we, of course...
Is that legal?
Well, we, of course... Your first question was, tell me the law as it applies to the home, place, real estate owned by the person making application. And hopefully I gave you a good answer there. And that is the law. Now, of course, you know, Wes and I are you know, aggressive in our knowledge of this area of the law, as we stated at the beginning of the program. And we then realign these factual circumstances, which we are entitled to do in representing our clients, so as to be able to avoid this lien recovery by the state of North Carolina when, in fact, our loved one dies. So there are ways, very, very tangible ways, in which we're able to structure the title to the home, place, or any real estate, actually, in such a posture where the state of North Carolina will not be able to recover it under their lien recovery statutes.
But you're going to have to look farther down the road than just 2 or 3 years, though. Right?
The planning techniques that we use, you know, allow the property to be not countable and not subject to the lien immediately upon the completion of the work that we do.
Okay.
So there's not a look back period, you know, with regard to that. So I think the short answer to Finley's question is that it's not illegal to do what he's saying to do, to use his term.
Right.
I mean, it's legal to go ahead and sell and do those kind of things, but I want to come back to that in just a second. But what Cecil has just described is that we would never recommend doing that because we have a much better option. And that much better
option. Okay. Yeah. That answers the question. Good. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
Right.
I follow you.
And the much better option is, you know, involves titling the property in a certain way, it does involve the use of trust in many, certain types of trust in many situations. But the results that we can give clients under the Medicaid law, mm-hmm. following the law to a T, are excellent with regard to real property, including the home place.
Well, and the other aspect of his question, though, was also about being able to still live in the home if you're returning home.
We're certainly able to provide provisions where our loved one is able to continue to reside in the home, mm-hmm. or has an intention to return home. The concept here is that we don't want to lose the home. We don't want to lose the home on the front end,
right,
when we're qualifying for Medicaid, but we don't want to lose it on the back end either, mm-hmm. When our loved one is no longer with us. We just simply want to not lose what is to many people the most valuable asset that mm-hmm. they have.
Okay.
Now, Ben, we don't want to confuse folks. There is a 5-year look back period. Mm-hmm. Absolutely, listeners, there is. That is the law. It used to be 3 years. It's now 5 years. We're very aware of that. There is a 5-year look.
What's a 5-year look back?
That means that if there's a transfer within 5 years, then of course that transfer is going to be looked at. And it is going to be, if you will, the word is sanctioned. It's going to be sanctionable. It's going to penalize the applicant from qualifying for Medicaid because they made a transfer within the last 5 years. Okay?
Aha. Uh-huh.
However,
yeah, okay, I'm with you.
Using legal language here, what is a transfer?
Yeah.
And
right.
The way in which we structure the transaction does not qualify within the law. Medicaid provisions, the rulings of the Medicaid rulings, mm-hmm. to be, in fact, a complete and total transfer.
Okay.
And as a result of it not being within the definition of a transfer, mm-hmm. we therefore avoid the law as to the 5-year look-back period.
Okay, so Finley, again, those are, believe it or not, those are simple answers to a complicated question, and there's a lot more to it.
It just reminds me, if you go hire an attorney. Yeah.
There you go.
Well, listen, thanks. I'll talk to you Thursday with a simple question about tomatoes.
Okay. All right. Thanks. Appreciate it, Finley.
Thank you.
And again, if you have questions too, that's one of the most common. I mean, that's the question there that you guys get all the time. So, if you have other questions like that, you can call 800-818-2255. Our local number is 247-7282-353-4674. Welcome back. This is Coastal Daybreak here on the Talk Station FM 107 and AM 1240. And Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins, attorneys at law, online at harvellandcollins.com. And Wes, we were just talking about how you guys are often called in the role of firemen, you know, to come put out the fire after.
Yeah, Finley's question was kind of the million-dollar question that we get all the time with regard to protecting the house or mm-hmm. other real estate and those type things. And I hope what listeners take away from the response is that it can be complicated, but if you go to someone who knows what they're doing with regard to using these Medicaid laws, then you really can protect that property. Mm-hmm. You can do it in a absolutely legal, transparent way, mm-hmm. In a way that the law carves out that allows us to do. But the results are great mm-hmm. Under the law. However, if you kind of just sit back and hope everything is going to be okay, then you could have some serious issues right. that would make it very difficult for an attorney to help you. I'm dealing with a case right now where an elderly lady owned a home, and that's really all she did own after she had spent down the other money mm-hmm. that she had. And the family signed an intent to return home, mm-hmm. As Cecil's referring to. And she received Medicaid for a period of time, a year or so.
Right.
Everything seemed fine because Medicaid would not count the home because the intent to return home was signed.
Mm-hmm.
Well, she passed away, and it happened to be that her niece was living in the home with her and had lived in the home with her forever, basically.
Right.
Her niece is like 40-something. Mm-hmm. So her niece and her family are living in the home. Basically, she raised this niece. So, of course, the Division of Medical Assistance, third-party recovery notice comes in, the lien comes in, and
then
the notice that they're going to have the property sold.
Hmm.
Well, when that happens, you know, you're looking at, you're thinking, well, are they really going to do that or are they not going to do that? Well, they have hired local counsel. The mm-hmm. local counsel has filed a petition for judicial sale of the property.
Mm-hmm.
And we're dealing with currently, we're in that fireman role. We're trying to deal with the problem now. There's a large lien on the home. Mm-hmm. And it looks like the home is going to be sold on the courthouse steps. We're working out that resolution best we can.
Mm-hmm.
But if we had done the planning, if the client had done the planning before she had died, it could have been she could have already received Medicaid.
Right.
And have been receiving Medicaid. We could have done the planning before she died, even days before she died. And the Division of Medical Assistance would then not have the legal right to seek recovery through that lien. But since the planning was not done before she passed away, we're now on the other end of that, and we're trying to negotiate. We're trying to use some of the provisions with regard to hardship. We're at a disadvantage with regard to negotiating and resolving this. So
you know, and once again, that's a pay me now or pay me later kind of scenario that comes up so frequently.
Yeah, and Ben, for our listeners, we touched on this. We jumped around a bit today, which was wonderful, and Finley certainly helped with all of his questions and calls. But we'll go through this in a little bit more of a logical way next week and even into the following week. We want to also discuss the guardianship. We want to discuss the powers of attorney that are necessary. We want to discuss incompetency issues and how sometimes they arise. We want to talk more specifically about what kind of transfers we're talking about that do not trigger or are outside the 5-year look back period.
Right.
That is a key thing for our listeners to hear, because they all know that there is this 5-year look back period, and they many times do not seek advice because they just think that, well, mom is on her way and we didn't do this 5 years ago.
Right.
And therefore there's no need to call a lawyer right now and do anything because we waited too long.
Right. Exactly.
But don't make that assumption. There are things that can be done that will receive a good result for the family, even though we're within that 5-year period.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and once again, it's always the stories that every case is individual, and so even though you have expertise in so many variety of cases, everyone is different. So you have to look at those circumstances.
It absolutely
is. You can't
is.
Count on what your neighbor's circumstances
right.
were.
And a lot of folks jump to the conclusion it's time to sell the home, and they in fact do sell the home.
Right.
Then they come in 6 months later and say, we sold the home, by the way.
Yeah. You find out more by making that appointment with Harvell and Collins at 252-726-9050, 726-9050, 1107 Bridges Street in Morehead City.